take my
Are you ready to overreact
off.
To one day of Practors?
Ooh, and we're back. It's Half Sam and Dan on demand from the fan, live from the Nick Gardner Studios.
Nick Gardner Studios.
Brought to you by Anthony Mandela and Anthony Spitzer.
Wow, we're getting them all in right away.
I mean, why not? We're professionals.
I think he's good to our sponsors, Dan.
My name is Sam Schmitz, Swiss Army Knife producer, now mostly just post-game Brewers baseball producer. For post games with Tim Allen, you can find me at Sam_Schmitz. To my right, Dan Plucker, executive producer of the Wendy's Big Show. You can find him at Dan on Demand or Dan on the Fan.
Sorry. Dan on the Fan.
Dan on the Fan on Twitter. And to my very far right, socially distanced, plenty.
But I'm not far right. I want to put that out there.
Right.
I'm to your far right, but I am not far right.
Right. Because we are not talking politics.
Just putting that out there.
This is not a political podcast. This is not.
Hello.
I'm
ready to derail this thing already.
What's your title now? Because you go back and forth every week.
Well, that's the thing.
As of right now, what is
funny,
it?
Funny, starting Friday, I'll be the executive producer for another week and a half.
I can't keep up with this, man.
Joe officially says that I'm the associate producer, and he's trying to get Bill to mention it. And I was like, would I rather be called Bill's good buddy or his associate producer? And I don't know.
I would take the associate producer tag because good buddy sounds like you have no responsibilities and you're just hanging out.
Also true. That's what I'm leaning towards, but I really don't
know.
And
if he keeps calling you the associate producer of the entire Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network, I think you have a better chance of maybe getting some more recognition rather than him just saying, oh, it's my good buddy, Evan Heffelberger.
Well, that's true. On my LinkedIn, can I put good buddy for the Bill Michaels show?
I think you should put that in your Twitter bio.
That's actually, you know, I'm doing that right now.
You're welcome.
It is July 15th. We are broadcasting to you on a Sunday. Broadcasting/podcasting, you know what I mean.
A couple weeks
July
ago, by
15th.
The way, I changed it
it's
to
August
say...
15th.
Jeez, man, I'm getting...
It's Saturday, August 15th. It's Saturday, not Sunday. I'm not sure what Sam's been doing. But
I've been moving all day.
I'll cut him some slack. It's moving Saturday, all day. August 15th. You're probably hearing us on Sunday, August 16th.
True.
Or if I'm feeling crazy, I put it out tonight, but I don't see that being the case.
Do you not put out all the time, Evan?
What are you trying to say?
I'm just trying to derail the show again, just
I'm
like you're
celibate,
trying to do.
You mother.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Man,
I know
are
for a fact
already
that's
off
not
the
true.
Rails.
All right, let's talk about the Packers, huh?
So,
breaking news today.
Breaking news on the Fan.
Speaking of homes, Kenny Clark can now call Green Bay home for the next 4 years as he wakes up to a four-year, $70 million extension.
Cha-ching.
I'm going to be honest, was not expecting it to happen before the season was over. I think a lot of Packers fans would probably say the same with the amount of people that they have to extend or let go after the season.
Right.
Kenny Clark was probably... Everyone's either one or two, but I'd
be surprised if he wasn't everybody's one. I mean, I know David Bakhtiari is up there too.
Right, and then you got people who think of running back as the number one priority after a great year.
Yeah, well, those people just don't know football very well.
But that now makes Kenny Clark the highest paid nose tackle in NFL history. Kind of insane when you think about it.
No kidding.
He plays for the Packers.
Other defensive tackles, well, I know Kenny is a nose tackle, but other defensive tackles have been getting paid. And now Kenny Clark just goes right into that upper echelon, as he should. And he is only 24 years old, which makes it really hard to relate to that he is technically the same age as me.
Yeah, I turn 24 in 2 months.
Right.
And I do not have...
And you 70. Are not the highest paid nose tackle in NFL history.
No, but I weigh about the same amount as one. I could be having $70 million right now. That's crazy.
Right.
Instead, I make a little less than that as an associate producer good buddy on the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network, which is officially in my Twitter bio now.
Good. I'm glad you made that switch. So I was trying to look it up because I was going to try to come up with some cool fact, but I can't find how much Reggie White made in his career. But I'm sure that now our good buddy Kenny Clark has made a lot more than Reggie White did in his entire career.
I think that's fair to say.
$70 million is a good chunk of change. And well-deserved. I mean, he's probably a top, three, four nose tackle in the game right now?
I think it's
like
hard
Aaron
to argue
Donald,
against that.
Chris Jones is up there. And then
does Aaron Donald count as a nose tackle?
Yeah, he does. He's an interior guy.
For some reason, I think of him as more of an edge.
Mm, he's mostly on the interior.
But he's listed as a defensive tackle.
Right. Defensive tackle, nose tackle, whatever you want to call him. But Kenny Clark is dominant, and he's still so young. He still has so much more time to grow that it's just, it was the obvious choice to sign him. If they would not have made him a priority, I would have been stunned.
Right.
Especially with how they disregard the middle linebacker position in Green Bay right now. They've seen no value in middle linebacker, which I think is nuts.
Yeah, don't get me started on that, because that's something I might want to touch on later in this topic if you guys will, you know, indulge in me ranting for a second.
Okay.
I listened to Kyle Brandt's interview with Aaron Rodgers, and it got me mad about the Packers draft again, so I want to circle back on it. The podcast was fantastic, by the way. Really, really, really good.
Yeah, it's on The Ringer, right?
I believe so. I listened to it on Spotify,
okay,
which you cannot find this on. But I think, yeah, Kenny Clark is the perfect guy to go number one for signing an extension of the, like, 15 Packers that are up for it next year. I think it was Andy Herman had the tweet. I was looking at it today. He's 24, so this contract will run out when he's 28, 29 years old.
And he'll still be up for another big contract.
The Packers will have gotten his true prime and gotten, at that point, probably a really good deal on it, because you know the salary cap is going to explode.
And then they'll draft another defensive tackle to replace him.
Or they trade him or something, and then Kenny Clark gets one more big contract. So it is...
Right.
You rarely see in the NFL a win-win contract, but this to me seems like a win-win.
Right.
It's either he's going to get another big payday when he's done, or he's a Packer for life and we get, I mean, what you hope to be one of the best nose tackles in Packers history.
I think he could probably end up being up in that upper echelon.
Yeah, for sure.
I think
if he's already not.
Right.
It's now all the pressure is on him because he has to live up to that contract.
Correct.
And it's hard for a defensive player to do it, because sometimes a lot of defense isn't in
your way.
A lot of defense isn't in counting stats.
Right.
No. It's about, I mean, especially for an interior lineman, it's all about plugging holes.
And unfortunately, that's the only way that fans view it. Like, the only way that fans are going to be able to justify Kenny Clark and his play is if he has more sacks and more tackles for loss and all of this BS that actually doesn't even matter, because, again, it's just a lack of knowledge of the X's and O's of the game and opening up other opportunities for other people, which is my argument for why Rashawn Gary is a good defensive player.
I love Rashawn Gary. I'm putting that out there. I'm Rashawn Gary's biggest fan, Packers fan now.
Oh, are you?
Probably not, but I really like him.
Well, don't tell him you work for the station.
I saw some idiot tweet out in the response to Schefter's, like, breaking of the news. He's talking about, like, how this is an overpay and how he's not even that good because, like, his tackles, he doesn't make that many tackles. And then he was saying because he was trying to defend it in the comments, he was like, well, why wouldn't they re-sign Blake Martinez? He doubled the next guys on the team, like, tackle production. And everyone was in the replies like, yes, because tackles is what makes you a really good player.
No.
And the Packers are just out of their mind for not re-signing this guy who had 120 tackles. There's more to it. If you watch Blake Martinez, yeah, he got 12 tackles a game, but he missed 8.
Right.
And he was always getting his tackles 8 yards down the field, maybe more.
We haven't even talked about pass coverage either with Blake Martinez.
What pass coverage?
Right. So, I mean, I think especially with defensive tackles, the thing that you have to account for is the grown-ass man factor.
Yeah.
And, I mean, when I watch Chris Jones, basically, I see him moving two people. I see a double team, and he goes through the double team.
Aaron Donald moves the whole offensive line with him.
So, I mean, you can look for stats to verify your opinion, but you just turn on the game film, and you see Kenny Clark swimming through a double team and all that.
Yeah, if he can take up the center and the right guard or the center and the left guard, that opens up so much of your offense or your defense.
So many more opportunities.
You're already limiting two offensive linemen to one guy. That creates a gap somewhere. Plus, you don't have to factor tackling, the quarterback or whatever if it's a run play. It just makes it so much easier for your defense to know where to go if you know that that guy is consistently going to take on the A-gap on the right side or the A-gap on the left side.
Right.
It's underrated.
The thing we're not really mentioning, too, is he put up most of his production in his early years with no help. This is that was last year. He finally had Za'Darius and Preston.
Who was his best help? Like Dayton Jones,
Tyler Lancaster, probably. Yeah.
I mean, you look
Dean Lowry,
and again, that just shows you how much value Kenny Clark has to this team because you look at the other guys at the position right now. It's like Montrevious Adams, who everybody was hyping up in the training camp last year, and he's done jack blank since then, and he's been injured left and right. Dean Lowry, Tyler Lancaster, like you were saying, like the Packers knew that they were not going to be able to rely on these guys, which made it so extremely important that they inked Clark to this deal.
I think the biggest thing that, you know, I kind of touched on it right before we got into the conversation, but kind of like Christian Yelich's extension, is that nobody was expecting it to come now.
Yeah.
Before the season even started.
Mm-hmm. Literally the first day of practice.
Right. So, I mean, that just makes the signing 10 times better. But now,
and I don't think it's that ridiculous of a contract. Like, no, I saw it, and no, I wasn't like, "Oh, this is an overpay. Oh, this is too much."
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of money to tie into a guy. But
I hate that about the NFL in particular, especially with quarterbacks. That because this guy got this contract, no matter who you are or what you've done, now, you know, since you're the youngest guy, especially with quarterbacks like Dak Prescott, all of a sudden has to
make
the most
$70 million dollars next year,
because his deal 10 years down the line will be not worth anything of what it's worth.
Right.
Remember when Aaron Rodgers was the highest paid quarterback two times?
Matt Ryan was the highest paid quarterback?
How about Kirk Cousins?
Yeah, it's a very, as Gary would say, it's a fluid situation.
Yeah.
But now I kind of want to talk about what that means for the rest of the free agents that are here for Green Bay.
Yeah.
Because I think we touched on it a little bit. There's Kevin King. I mentioned it first that time.
Thank you.
Unlike I did in the show meeting. Man. Sorry, Sam. So Kevin King, the corner, David Bakhtiari, the left tackle, Corey Linsley, the center. Who else am I forgetting here?
Jamal Williams.
Yeah, Jamal Williams. But I actually heard there are rumors that he might get cut, which would be interesting.
What?
Yeah, there were rumors that Jamal Williams could be on the cut block.
For what? Like for Dexter
who?
Williams? Or
Yeah,
no.
Dexter Williams and A.J.
No,
Dillon.
No,
yeah, well
because, A.J. Dillon,
but,
duh.
But Matt LaFleur said that he expects Dexter Williams to get more snaps this year in a press conference, and then they drafted A.J. Dillon. So the odd man out, the fourth running back, hypothetically, in that situation, would be Jamal Williams.
So Aaron Jones, A.J. Dillon are locks. I think Tyler Irvin is a lock.
Well, yeah, but he's more of a...
I think he still counts as
a running back. Yeah,
they're working him in there.
A special back. That's what I would call
him. He's kind of just... He's like a Taysom Hill gadget player.
He is. Gadget.
Fullback. Who's the new fullback we got?
The guy from the Chiefs.
Lovett. Yeah. Lovett.
Adam Lovett? Something like that.
Yeah, you know at least one fullback is a lock. So you're already at four right there. Then it probably is going to come down to Dexter or Jamal. And
I'm sorry.
How much more controllable is Dexter than Jamal?
It's just what I've seen from Dexter on the film. I don't care about it. Like
people sleep on Jamal, but
Jamal's a great pass catcher. At one point last year, I thought Jamal was our better pass catcher between the two and Aaron Jones.
I think so.
And you can argue Aaron Jones is better, but I just think Jamal is a little more consistent. People do not give Jamal props for his pass blocking, which is great. We're not going to also talk about his pass catching skills and that Aaron Rodgers touchdown in Kansas City where he just flicks it in the corner of the end zone and Jamal somehow comes down with it. So on top of that, you're talking about a guy who just brings that energy into the locker room. Good energy, not like distractions and all that.
He's the heart of that locker room.
I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, there's almost too many people for them to. I mean, some people are going to.
Somebody's going to have to go, and it's going to be some tough decisions. But anyway, back to the guys that are left that still need extensions. So we basically, Aaron Jones is the other one that big name that for whatever reason I thought didn't think of. But Aaron Jones, Kevin King, David Bakhtiari, and Corey Linsley. And now, I mean, they just locked up over $20 million a year here to Kenny Clark.
Mm-hmm.
So where are they going to allot the rest of this money?
So do we know how much the Packers have in cap space after this contract?
I don't know. After this year, you mean?
Yeah. So I feel like that's something that one of the beat writers should have. I would hope.
Cap space.
I don't think it's going to be like very much because you got a lot of money locked up into like 3-4 year contracts.
SalaryCapCalculator.com. Has the Packers with $31 million in cap space for next year.
I'm assuming that's before the contract.
Probably before, yes, it is before the deal with Kenny Clark.
Now, we don't know what the cap hit is of this.
Well, especially with, you know, how the pandemic affects the season and all that, because more than likely the cap's going to go down.
Well, and what was it? I think it was $31 million guaranteed and a $25 million signing bonus. Something like that?
Yeah.
So that, I mean, that takes away 25 grand or 25 grand, 25 million of the contract essentially for a cap hit. So maybe his cap hit next year is only like $7-8 million potentially.
Yeah, we'll have to see. But even so, I don't think you can get back every name that you want with
no, there's no way
with the money that's left. So they're going to have to make some tough decisions.
I think you're only going to be able to bring back like 2-3 people most.
Right. And I think they're going to prioritize the secondary, especially if Kevin King can stay healthy this year. And then that left tackle spot with David Bakhtiari, with him just being, you know, one of the best tackles in the game. And he's still only, what, 27, 28?
Yeah.
Like, to extend him to a longer contract. But that's the one that I really worry about, the tackle. Because, I mean, we just saw, what's the Texans' left tackle's name?
Tunzel,
right. Who made, what, like... $28 million.
Okay. We got to specify.
Listen, I know.
It's the Bill O'Brien effect.
It was the Bill O'Brien effect. The Texans making a boneheaded move, paying a tackle way too much money.
I mean, not only did they make them the highest paid, but like they buco like paid them.
Well, I understand that, but nonetheless, the standard has been set. Yeah. And that's the way
in
we were
theory.
Just talking about it. That's the way
in
that
theory.
This works.
Well, right. We'll see how many
it's not
of these...
right, but it's the way that it works.
Well, right. But when the precedent is set that high for left tackle, I think there's going to be a couple teams. I'm not talking specifically with Bakhtiari, but I think if, you know, another team had a left tackle to pay, they'd be like, yeah, Bill's a little crazy on that one. We're going to, like, give you this much.
Right.
Like,
listen, but even that's going to – it's a bartering chip that Bakhtiari can now use.
Yeah.
And say, I'm better than Laremy Tunsil.
Well, he is.
And he's getting paid this much money, and he might not say, I need you to pay me more than this, but he might say, I need you to pay me – pretty darn close.
Right. No, I mean, Bakhtiari is my, after, you know, Kenny's gone now, or for extension-wise, I mean, Bakhtiari is my number one. And
yeah,
I think you
so
know,
too.
If he asked for $20 million a year, I'd be like, yeah, I don't have a problem with it. It sucks that we're going to have to pay that much, but you deserve it.
Right.
The Pro Bowls speak for themselves. I don't know if he's an all-pro team, but he's definitely
I think it was he made all-pro but didn't make Pro Bowls.
Right.
Or it was something ridiculous like that.
But, I mean,
he's
got the accomplishments.
Shafted. I think it's hard to disagree. Corey Linsley has been great for the Packers.
Yeah.
But do we want to pay a center $15 million? No.
Especially when you just drafted like five different linemen you can probably pick and plug in there.
One of those guys, because a couple of those were interior linemen. I'm pretty sure Runyon was an interior lineman, right?
He played tackle but will play guard at the end.
Well, they did draft
level.
The center from Oregon, though.
Oh, Jake Hansen, yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
So they will have the ability to plug someone in there. Corey Linsley was a fifth-round pick or a fourth-round pick.
Yeah.
Packers are good at developing these offensive linemen.
Right.
But it's hard to develop one of the, if not the best, left tackles in the game. And Bakhtiari, that's the thing about him, too, is this is his second contract.
Mm-hmm.
The Packers don't give third contracts to people, but they do give second contracts.
Well, and the interesting thing to me, too, is Ryan Wood brought this up, and he was talking about the competition on the right side of the line because Lane Taylor's back. And then there's Billy Turner, and then they signed Ricky Wagner.
Right.
So it there are three solid guys on the right side of the line there. Hypothetically, could one of them play center?
Not Wagner. And Lane Taylor might be able to.
I think center's a little more difficult to learn and develop into.
I would probably trust Billy Wagner on that. Billy Turner, sorry.
And
it's been a long day.
No, it's okay. So I'm just curious as to see what they do with that situation, if it means dealing one of them for a pick and then using that on a center or for, like, literally swapping. There have been times it's happened in NFL history where you swap, like, a right tackle or a right guard for a center. It happened this past offseason. I can't remember. The Chargers and Panthers, I think, made a deal.
Yeah, it happens.
It happens. And maybe that's what winds up happening here with whichever is the third string, because those are three pretty solid guys in that situation.
No,
so the odd man out might potentially be moved for a center.
Barring injuries, the Packers' offensive line is one of, if not the strongest portions of that team.
Right. Agreed.
Bakhtiari, if he's not number one, he is a close number two of what's left. I agree with Kevin King, because what we've seen from him, it's been in flashes.
Right.
If he can stay on the field.
Which he did last year.
For the most part, he is really, really, really good. And pair him along Jaire Alexander, who is, I mean, what? He's what, a top five in Madden this year in rating?
Right.
And, you know, that might be a little much, but,
right.
I mean, he's what, 23, 24 years old,
mm-hmm.
and he is a stud. Like, they won't throw over to him because he's
a
stud.
With how important the pass defense is in the NFL nowadays, with all of these teams, like, all like the Chiefs, they just won the Super Bowl because they just throw the ball every single down. And
right.
same thing with the Saints. And the Saints are a little bit different. But, you know, they have the Michael Thomas effect and Drew Brees and that combo. We have so many combos of elite wide receivers and quarterbacks in the league today that you have to prep with solid secondaries. And if you don't have a good secondary, you're going to get beat up a lot.
So I think that another thing that is aiding in the fact that the Packers will bring back Kevin King is once you're, if you have that many guys up for contracts, you need to find the guys who are going to take the least amount. And Kevin King is probably that guy because the Packers can say, like, listen, we know you're good, but you haven't stayed healthy.
Right.
You've played one season with more than 14 games or something like that. We're going to give you, even if it's, we're going to give you this 2-year contract, $14-15 million. Prove you can get this, and then we'll give you your next contract.
That's really like the numbers that I was thinking.
I don't know if Kevin would necessarily agree to that because he knows how good he is.
Right.
But where else
is he going to go? Does he want to risk, you know, being the number one or number three at some other team and trying to?
And then not. Well, the other teams, they have to think, okay, is this guy worth the injury risk?
Right.
Right.
So I think
he doesn't have much bargaining room. I agree.
I think most likely to come back is Kevin King if they can get him on a deal like that. But that he's not necessarily the most important, but to give Jaire a good 1-2 punch, I think that that is one of, if not the most important things.
Agreed.
For the next offseason.
Agreed. We'll have to see where it winds up going.
And I think one name that we haven't talked about, because I think we all are kind of in agreement, is Aaron Jones probably won't get re-signed.
I don't see it happening. I don't see a single way that it happens.
Unless he, for some godforsaken reason, decides to take a hometown discount and stay.
Either that or if he gets hurt this year.
I just don't believe in the whole giving running backs running backs contracts.
I am a huge running backs fan. Like, forever and eternity in fantasy football, I've been a running back first and even second round guy.
Right.
But it's not... I mean, you look at the past few years, the highest paid running backs, you're almost paying for past production,
mm-hmm.
not current production. I mean, look at Todd Gurley as example 1A, Devontae Freeman 1B.
No.
And both of those were otherworldly guys before they signed that contract. So far, one of the only guys who has proven that he's worth it is Zeke.
Right.
Zeke, and to be fair, knock on wood, because he's a keeper for me in fantasy football.
Me too.
It's only 1 year into the deal, but he's still only 25. He still has some life left in those legs.
Right.
Can Derrick Henry be worth that massive contract? I don't know. His body is built for it, but I don't know.
He takes a different kind of beating, though.
I was going to say, like, compared to the pass-catching running backs, he's just in a whole different league.
Yeah.
But I agree, though. Like, and the thing that we got to think about, too, especially in, like, today's NFL, is that you're seeing a lot more of the stable, I guess, mentality, where you got three different running backs. One's a pass catcher, one's the bruiser, one's the, you know, third down specialist.
The speedster.
Like, right. So, like, you know, that's clearly what A.J. Dillon's brought in for.
Mm-hmm.
Give Aaron Jones less snaps, keep him more healthy.
He's going to pick up 3 yards for you.
Yeah, and Aaron Jones is now going to be, your primary pass catcher. So I just don't think, like, Aaron Jones, man, he's got a lot of his stuff came from the red zone last year on the goal line.
I hope LaFleur was watching game tape from last year, because the Packers offense was at their best when they were using Aaron Jones like Christian McCaffrey.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
And of course, that was when...
Especially in that Dallas game.
No, I'm thinking Kansas City.
That was a good one, too.
The game I'm thinking of.
The Minnesota game, even.
Yeah, and it's a couple of those games you look, it's because Devontae was out. And so part of that is Aaron, you know, he has his favorites. He does that. But if LaFleur can utilize Aaron Jones in that way, where he's getting 15 carries, 8 catches a game, how do you stop this Packers offense?
Him like a little Alvin Kamara.
Yeah, even Alvin Kamara, I'm cool with that.
Even to the point previously, like even the Saints are going with the committee factor.
Yeah,
they got last year they had Latavius Murray.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like these running backs, they can have one good year, but it's just so hard to repeat it.
Right.
So
one of the only benefits that the Packers would have in this is a lot of running backs are already locked up to contracts, mm-hmm. and teams aren't paying two.
Not next year. You see next year's running back class?
No.
Oh, it's everybody. It's like Mixon, Fournette. Like, it's one of those years.
Well, that's the thing.
Right. It's like one of those years where there's so many.
I would take Aaron Jones above all of those.
Kind of like this year's quarterback class where there's so many at the same position that there's just not going to be enough jobs. And you're going to have guys like, you know, Cam Newton and all that looking for a team and like with less than a month to go before a training camp and stuff like that.
Imagine if the Packers get Joe Mixon next year on like a cheap deal.
I don't think that's happening.
It's right. not.
I mean, you got to trust Gutekunst. Do we trust Gutekunst?
That is an interesting point, though, because with how diluted the free agency class is going to be with all these running backs, like how...
And I feel like a lot of front office execs are thinking a lot like us, where you can't pay a running back.
Right,
like
and so if all of these people are saying they can't pay a running back a big deal, maybe that's a purpose for Aaron Jones getting another contract with the Packers, not necessarily for big money.
Well, it might work
money.
To their favor, because
right,
they,
that's what I mean. Yeah. Like it could end up benefiting them a lot. So I guess we'll find out.
And that plays into the Kevin King argument as well. It's another one of those guys where is another team going to outbid the Packers for their service? Are they going to overpay for their service?
Right.
Because the Packers, I think they'll offer a fair deal, not necessarily a cheap deal, but a fair deal. And it's up to another team to exceed that deal. And will that happen for those guys? I don't know.
I'm just looking at this class, man. You got like Tevin Coleman, Leonard Fournette, Alvin Kamara, Joe Mixon, Dalvin Cook just got an extension, so he's off there now. But, I mean, you got guys too like Kenyon Drake and all that, who's probably going to have another big year in Arizona with Cliff Kingsbury. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see who the next domino to fall is on this Packers free agent list.
And will we see one not only this offseason or this season, but in the next month?
Well, that's what I feel bad about is like these guys in their contract year in this season, especially.
Right.
It's like
there's pressure on them.
I don't know what to expect.
If this season doesn't happen, these guys, they're going to want to set up their contract of the future. So maybe that's why Kenny Clark did it. Because he's thinking, we're not having a season this year. Let me sign this contract, get my $25 million signing bonus. Then if this season doesn't happen, I'm set up.
Well, that's why you're seeing Kittle just got a big deal. Kelsey just got a big deal.
Right.
All these guys, there's a bunch of other extensions that happen. So
it's going to be interesting. And I think that plays into it.
NFL, man, we still don't know what to expect from this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we're going to know until week one. So, with that being said, we're going to transition from one sport that's going into progress and one sport that is in progress. Now, granted, it might not be doing the best, but we're going to talk some Brewers baseball coming up after the break. I don't know. I had no idea what we were talking about next.
What's your middle name?
Robert.
Robert Specialty Meats?
welcome back. It is Hef, Sam, and Dan on demand, on the fan. Almost stumbled right out of there. Jeez, it's been such a long day between Evan and I. Dan's just strolling in here, nothing to do.
What do you mean?
I told you
what I was doing all day. But
it's been it's been a long day, but I've had a lot of fun. I slacked off so much at work today. Because I got to hang out with one of my best buddies, and we spent the entire time. My voice keeps cracking. I apologize.
That's another drop.
Because I was yelling a lot today, and I was yelling last night. So, mark it. Go ahead. Mark your territory.
It is Saturday, August 15th.
It is
not July.
You're probably listening to this on Sunday.
We are coming to you. Literally, moments before we started recording this, the Brewers won today.
When this comes out, I will be on the golf course.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah.
Just want to throw that out.
I'll probably
subtle
be
flex
doing
in there.
I had to pay for it, and there goes like 2 weeks' salary.
Well, they still get to golf.
That's true.
Some of us haven't golfed in like 5 years.
That sucks. Yeah. I cannot relate. I will be probably two drinks deep and I have probably broken one or two clubs at this point.
Speaking of things that make you want to get like 3-4 drinks deep, the Milwaukee Brewers. Because, man, other than before this series against the Cubs,
the cardiac
crew, the offense was putrid, to say the least.
Yeah,
they just could never get anything going. Christian Yelich was flashing that he might be getting out of a slump. He would get something here and there. Finally, like I said, this past series and the one before, looks like he's finally out of it. Just cranking taters. But, I mean, it's been a weird season overall in baseball. We just
kinda,
had another.
It's just a weird, wacky season.
We had
know?
Another team. Had a couple of positive tests this morning, so.
Yeah, I mean, that news broke last night, and no one talked about it.
No.
Like, I just.
Such a bummer for baseball.
The problem, and we talked about it a couple weeks ago when we did the podcast, it was never going to be easy for baseball because they rushed so quick into it. They didn't think about it. Like, what's the point of the taxi squad if you can't play those guys? Because you can't play because you have to quarantine everybody. Because it takes 3 to 5 days to figure out who actually is positive or not. That's the problem.
It's just a mess. Like the Brewers offense.
Well. Hell!
All right. But, I mean, like I said, before this podcast, the Brewers just won 6-5. They now can at least split the series with the Cubs, if not win 3 out of 4 after tomorrow.
Two straight come-from-behind wins.
Man.
Which is... like unheard of.
We're just kind of doing a temperature check right now on how we're feeling. We're dipping our foot into the pool a little bit because it's been, I mean, this past week, I think everyone can admit on the station, it's been hard to talk about every game after just the same thing every night. You know, offense doesn't do anything. Pitching's great.
Just ask Bill Michaels. He was having a hard time with it just because it's such a rough game and the team just wasn't hitting, and he just, like, what do you say about the team, you know?
Right.
Bill was struggling to find things to say about the team. He also called it one of the worst teams in Brewers history, and
I think and he's proven wrong by that, though. Like, ridiculously wrong.
Well, and he was going off of win percentage, which, by the way, they were 7-10, by the way. And he was going off of win percentage.
9-11 now.
9-10.
9-10?
Yeah.
9-10, right.
Yeah, so that's the funniest thing about it, but we don't need to get into that yet, but we can get into the pitching and how excited it gets me. I get tingly down my body when I see the box score every game, because I don't get to watch every single game.
I don't think any of us do,
but
we try.
I try my best. I love going back. Like, if I worked at Home Depot and I missed the game, I go and I check the box score and I see, you know, Josh Lindblom pitched 4 1/3, and then Freddie Peralta pitched 4 2/3, and that was the rest of the game. That I never knew I needed to see that, but every time I see it, it's just like, oh, it makes me so happy, because it's like, that is such a baller pitching staff, where we have like 15 starters in the bullpen. We have one dude, like, if he's struggling that day, your starter, Eric Lauer, is only going 3 innings. It's okay. Corbin Burns is going to go 6. It's so much fun to, like, look back. The bullpen isn't hardly even being used that much.
No.
Besides and blowouts.
Council's still trying to figure out who he wants to implement in certain situations.
And today...
I mean, like, today you saw Corey Knebel come out in probably the worst-case scenario.
I mean, David Phelps has been your eighth-inning guy this year.
Right.
So I really think that he should have been the one going in for that.
Hasn't pitched in a couple days either.
Hadn't pitched in a couple of days.
It doesn't matter, though. Guys that are in that position, for guys that are setup men and closers, they should be ready all the time.
Well,
haven't pitched any in a couple of days. They should be ready to go.
Saying he should have been pitching because he wasn't tired.
I know.
So it should have been Phelps, especially if it was for one out. Because, well, that's the thing. Why wasn't Hader available today? Maybe it's just because he threw too many pitches yesterday.
Yeah.
He was an inning and a third yesterday, but he did walk.
I
want to
talk about Hader a little bit because I think that the Brewers are not utilizing him correctly.
I mean, you're preaching to the choir.
I know, but it's just like.
Yeah. Trust me, as Brewers fans, we.
There were multiple.
Oh, I know. I know. We talk about it all the time, but for this season is so much different than any other season that has been played so far.
in the history of baseball. Because every game
matters. Are you sure about that?
Every game matters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Very blanket statement there. But every freaking game matters more than ever before. And your best pitcher, who has been absolutely lights out against everybody he faces, is getting, like, no time.
He's barely pitched this year. In five games. And that is something that has...
Almost 20 games.
Yeah. That's something that's annoyed me, is, and this is going to sound really bad, but you need to pitch a guy like Hader into the ground. You need to pitch him every other day, no matter the situation. He should be the guy coming in sometimes in the fifth inning and pitching three
100%.
Innings.
I agree, in a season like this, but I mean, look at 162 games.
Right. Absolutely not. Hell no.
Because we saw what happened last year. His arm just blew out.
Yeah, last year, I think if they had switched him to being like the eighth and ninth inning guy for the full season, it would have been a lot better. But, I mean, you look at what did the council say in 2018 over and over again? We're not using Josh as a closer. We're using him as in the situation where we think that it'll impact the game most. And they're not doing that this year.
Right.
They're only waiting for closing situations. And they've lost a couple of games because of that.
Right.
Because of, like, Knebel giving up a home run. Or who else? I mean, well, don't
Alex
even get...
Claudio's been kind of meh.
Yeah. Yardley has been up and down.
Right.
There have been situations in, like, the seventh inning where you piss the game away.
Right.
Because you're not bringing
him
in.
My dream is that Angel Perdomo, who they just called up, ends up being the closer. That's my dream.
Okay.
Is that Perdomo ends up being the closer, and they don't... Because that's the question, is who else do you put there for Hader? Because I don't think there is a closer on this team. I don't. And I think Hader is the closest thing to it.
It should be Knebel, but... this is not the year to put him back there because he's still working his way back from Tommy John.
Exactly. And so that's why I really hope Perdomo comes up here, who they just called up on Thursday, right? Thursday?
Yeah, it might have been Friday.
But anyway, that he's a burner. Like, he throws like 100 miles an hour and has like a pretty decent off-speed pitch.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's the kind of guy, because that's the type of pitcher you want in your closing role, a guy that just throws gas.
Right.
So my dream is that he is the closer for this team, and they can unleash the hell of Josh Hader on the rest of the NLC Central and every other team that they play.
I mean, no one is going to disagree with you. I think it is just a downright crime that Josh Hader has only pitched in five of the 20
games.
Well,
and another point as to why they should burn him into the ground, like what you were saying, is he's said that he's kind of implied that he's not going to re-sign here.
You think so?
A couple of times. He said a couple of different things where it makes it sound like a long-term marriage between the Brewers and Josh Hader is not going to exist. Same thing with the Brewers. They've mentioned a couple of things in off-seasons and stuff like that. I can't think of specifics right now.
I think he's just going to end up costing too much money.
Exactly.
And they don't want to pay a reliever $15 million.
Exactly. They're not going to want to pay a reliever $8 to $15 million.
You never know what you're going to get year to year with them.
Right.
Exactly. Because he knows how good he is. And so if you know that this is a weird season, and not just for the Brewers, but for everybody, wouldn't you think that now is the time, this is the year that you're going to go all out for a World Series and maybe kill one of your pitchers, even if it is Josh Hader? I mean, if you look back at when the Cubs won the World Series, they massacred Aroldis Chapman's arm.
Oh my God.
They massacred it. And they
won a World Series
because of it.
There's a reason that he gave up a home run to Rajay Davis in Game 7 of the World Series. Because he was throwing 95.
Right.
And his arm was dead.
And that like, it's just because he pitched so much in such a limited amount of time for them, but they won a damn World Series. Like, why do we not see that type of importance to this season from the Brewers?
And
like,
I think one thing that I do think is still fresh on their mind is they did that with Jeremy Jeffress in 2018. And that was a 162 game season. I get it. But they drove him into the ground, and then September on, he was awful. Really, really
bad. But
this
season is not as long as that season.
I agree.
That's why I think if you're going to do it to a pitcher and say, we're going to go all out for a World Series this year, no more waiting, no more any of this other BS, this would be the year that you kill Josh Hader, for lack of a better term for it.
If the Brewers are playing six games in a week, I want Hader to pitch five, six innings a week.
Doesn't it make too much sense to put Devin Williams in the closer?
I've been so impressed with what I've seen from Devin Williams.
I mean, if you think about it as a closer, all you really need is somebody who can throw a fastball and have maybe one other pitch.
His changeup is insane.
Yeah. It is. It's really good.
And I wanted to touch on that before we dove in too deep, but last night, man, we're so spoiled with some of the pitching that we got because we were able to see Woodruff, Peralta, Williams, and Hader all pitching the same night.
Yeah.
And they all showed their stuff. I mean, Hader didn't really have a slider yesterday, but yeah, his fastball is still just classic Josh Hader fastball.
Woody ran into some trouble in the fifth inning, but or was it the sixth inning?
Hey, he fought, man. That was not his best outing.
He's a bulldog.
But, dude, like he had to grind through some of those at-bats.
He is a bona fide ace. I was listening a little bit to the postgame show yesterday, and I heard Timmy just go, he's like, oh, man, his ERA ballooned to 3.02. Or something like that. Like we have an ace, boys.
Right.
We have an ace.
And I'm not worried about yesterday because I'm gonna be honest, man. Like there's no starting pitcher really in baseball that's really impressed me this whole season so far.
Not even Lance Lynn.
Oh, Lance Lynn. I'm talking about the guys that you would expect.
Right.
Everyone's ace is not performing the way
and
that they
the
want.
Cubs offense is one of, if not the best, in the entire Major League Baseball.
But
they're finally playing up to the expectations they had last year.
Of course,
well,
yeah.
There's no weaknesses.
You know, your staff doesn't have to be that great because you got guys in the bullpen like Corbin Burnes and Freddy Peralta who can.
Right.
I don't like their situations that they're in, the middle relievers and the piggyback guys. I don't even know if I want them to go back in the starting rotation. I have no idea what I want.
That's
from
the
them.
Thing is, I long term they are starting pitchers, but this year Council has used them so perfectly. I think that Council sat down with them and was like, listen, you guys are vital to us winning. If our starters go in four innings, you are our next starter. Your game, figure that you are the starter starting in the fourth inning,
right,
and you're going the distance.
I don't know, man,
and it's worked. It's worked so well. Freddie has been lights out. His slider might be one of the nastiest pitches on the Brewers.
Damn near every night.
Corbin Burnes has been absolutely lights out. He's showing what he showed in 2018.
I'm all aboard on the Freddie Peralta bandwagon. I'm just still, I know there's a bunch of people at the station that love Corbin Burnes. I'm just not there yet.
Me neither.
Because I know, like last year, it can be looking as good as it is, and then all of a sudden, like this,
just one pitch,
it's just like five home runs. So
I
like what
I'm
seeing this
on.
Year. It's definitely a step up, but I'm just not there yet with Corbin.
And that's fair. But he's still only 24, 25. He's still got time to become a huge role in this team. And how about, another guy that we haven't talked about, Adrian Hauser.
Right. Once again, kind of like Woody, not the best day.
Coming into this year, I was not thrilled with him being in the rotation, but I was
Agreed.
Like, okay, he earned it last year. He at least earns the chance to try it out. And sure, he's had back-to-back iffy starts, but, I mean, his first three of the year were just insane.
Really good.
Right. Like, it looked like the Brewers had a bona fide 1-2 punch at the top of that pitching rotation, which we haven't seen since, I don't know, Gallardo and Ben Sheets? Like...
It's been a while. That's what I guess is probably the most exciting thing for Brewers fans, just because, you know, when we talk about the playoffs and the runs that they have / have not made, the biggest knock on it always has been the Brewers don't have that guy you can have complete confidence in at the start of the rotation for a playoff series. You know, a guy that can pitch game one and then game four again.
Yeah.
And then game seven, if he has to. And now I think they have that in Woodruff, and they have the confidence of a potential maybe second win with Adrian Hauser there at number two. And I think because that they now have that bona fide 1-2, it's going to pay really big dividends if they wind up making the playoffs, just because we've seen how clutch this team has been when their backs are against the wall. And I think they're kind of getting a sense of that already, which is what, like, after they got obliterated by the Twins and then came to Chicago and, again, lost big and didn't score a single run. They did, but, you know. And
they're still 12-2.
Right. Like, I think after those two games happened, like, they sat down in the locker room and were like, guys, in the clubhouse and said, but guys, we gotta figure this out. Because if we don't, we're already a third of the way through the season. Like, it's so weird to think about. We're 20 games in, but that's a third of this baseball season.
Right.
So They have to start playing like a legitimate playoff contender, or else they're going to be in serious trouble. And I think now, with that sense of urgency and with hopefully Woodruff and Hauser turning into one of the best 1-2 combos in the NL Central and maybe even in the league, they're going to have a bright future ahead. And that's why I don't want to give up on this team yet, which so many people, for whatever reason, already have.
Well, and that's something that Brewers fans are overlooking, is they're mad at what Stearns did to the offense this offseason.
Right.
But it's kind of a recency bias thing where it's like, do you really think that Yasmani Grandal would be like it with him, the Brewers would be, you know, 13-8 right now, or 13-6 or something? Like, there's no way.
Well, do you really think Yaz wants to be on the Brewers for another 4 years?
And there was I think Moustakas probably wanted to stay, but you can't turn down the contract that he's been waiting for 3 years.
Right.
I don't know who brought it up, but somebody brought it up and it made me really change my whole perspective on this team this year, is that these are all 1 year deals with options and stuff like that.
That's the thing. That's what I was getting into.
As bad as this team can be, you can have a whole different team next year just like that.
Like, think about it. Justin Smoke probably gone next year.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jed Jerko, he might come back.
Well, the Jerko Sogard Brock Holt platoon has not been paying off.
But I really like what Craig did to the lineup today, where he went Sogard, Urias Arcia, or
Urias
something like that.
Urias needs to be an everyday player. I have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah,
but Arcia's been so good.
Well, Urias can play second or third.
Well, right. And I think, again, this team thrives with their backs against the wall, and I think Arcia has his back all the way against the wall
That's
now
one thing
that knows
that
Urias
Arcia,
is there.
Like, look at the playoffs in 2018. He was probably their best player.
Right.
And that's what I love about Arcia. It's like, perfect example is game number one. The Brewers, if they didn't have Arcia in the lineup, got no hit.
Yeah.
Arcia had three
hits.
He was 3-for-3
yeah.
in that game. That's why I love Orlando so much.
I mean, I just wish we could be talking about the offense as much as we were talking about the pitching.
But
earlier this segment.
Yes, but like this is it's kind of a welcome change for the Brewers, because we've always talked about the offense and the
pitching
has been abysmal.
I mean, it's been almost balanced the past couple of years.
The thing is,
the bugaboo on this team is they still cannot hit with runners in scoring position.
They can't get...
They can't get anybody on base to begin with,
right.
But
right.
When they're on base, they can't get hits, runners
at
scoring position.
Well,
so here's the thing with that. Like, we know that Christian Yelich is not a 187 hitter.
Well,
right.
I'm taking Christian Yelich out of, like, all my frustrations with the offense, because that doesn't matter.
He still has a league average OPS, and he's been awful. Like, let's calm down.
I mean, like, Cody Bellinger's struggling with the Dodgers. Now, granted, he just hit a home run last
Look
night.
Look at Jose Altuve. Now, of course, he doesn't have the trash cans anymore, but...
Right.
He's still hitting 175.
That's what I mean. Like, all of these offenses throughout baseball are not performing as well as they usually do.
No,
and they don't have
the
162 to bounce back like they normally do.
Exactly.
I'm just talking about as a whole with Garcia, Smoke, Holt, Sogard.
Well, Smoldy's been heating up the last couple of days.
I have not been impressed with Garcia.
Really?
He's heated it up recently. But one of the things that, I mean, his defense has been good. One thing that I haven't liked from him is... I thought he was supposed to be the speed demon.
He looks slow.
I thought I heard that he had like one of the best sprint speeds in the outfield
like
or something.
A big guy, but like, yeah, you're not expecting like 25 stolen bases in a season.
He
is speedy for his size.
Okay.
But he's nowhere going to get you over 20 bags a year.
I haven't seen the pop that everyone said was coming.
That's the big thing, is Council keeps on flipping this lineup. And one day, you know, Avi Garcia goes like, 3-for-4 in the leadoff spot, the leadoff home run. And then the next day he's hitting back in sixth.
And
so I think that definitely messes with your head.
I think so too. I think Council needs to find the lineup that fits.
And that's what he's been messing
with. I know missing Lorenzo Cain and with Ryan Braun being out as well, like, those are two focal points in an everyday lineup. And because those two have been out the last couple of weeks, it's like, well, we got to throw
Narvaez
sticks,
as the leadoff hitter.
And we're getting this guy back, so we got to feed him at bat slowly. And
I think eventually Urias has to lead off.
Yeah.
And
Arcia.
And I was going to say, not be against Arcia being up at the top of the lineup as well.
The problem is he doesn't walk.
Yeah.
But then again, no one has been walking.
And
besides Sogard.
The thing is, Arcia has been the best hitter on this team this year, probably. And why do you keep it? Putting him in the nine.
Well, because he's that second leadoff hitter.
I understand that, but you want your better hitters, the guys that are hot, to get more at-bats.
I agree.
So I don't understand why he's not hitting, like, even if it's fifth or sixth.
I think
you know?
It's because Craig has this infatuation with Sogard.
Don't even get me started.
That's the thing is, Sogard has not been great.
No,
but I haven't been disappointed
been
with him.
Preston has been great.
Yeah. I mean, who has been the Brewers' best hitter?
The past 3 days has been Justin Smoke.
And before that, I don't know, maybe Avi? Like, it hasn't been that great.
Consistent. It hasn't been consistent.
I mean,
I guess
for
that's
a while.
Why it's a shift of lineup every day. But
Sogard was the best at getting on base for them. Like, he was hitting 180, but he had an on base percentage of 400.
Mm-hmm.
And his slugging was like 220, but like.
You don't expect him to not get runs.
No.
But
I think perfect. I agree with you. Arcia or Urias should be leading off, and I think Sogard should be hitting ninth.
Probably.
That's the way I see it. Or Ben Gamel ninth.
Yeah. Well, that kind of does it for our foot in the water temperature test on the Milwaukee Brewers. I'm kind of curious. Well, the next podcast, we're either going to be in the same spot that we're in now or in a very different spot, either good or bad. So I'm kind of curious where that's going to land. But we're going to transition from one frustrating offense to another in the Milwaukee Bucks in the NBA, coming up after this. Welcome back. It's Sam and Dan on Demand. It is Saturday, August 15th. We are broadcasting live from
the Nick Gardner Studios.
The Nick Gardner Kiss FM sponsored Anthony Mandela, Andy Spitzer
Studio.
Anybody jump in at any point to get me to stop talking.
Gentlemen,
studio.
It is almost playoff time in the NBA.
Man, that regular season just went by so quick, all 12 months of it.
Well, hey, we got to talk. Okay, before you get into the Bucks, I mean, this bubble action has been awesome.
Yeah,
you had you had the Darlings and the Phoenix Suns.
Maybe it's just because I keep getting like hits and like it just like it raised my dopamine levels like 150%. But
you
like,
had Damian Lillard, who just got voted unanimous bubble MVP today, and actually.
Deserved.
My phone just notified me. Dame Dalla did drop some new music today.
Really?
So there is that.
Okay.
You also had TJ Warren just turn into Michael Jordan for about a week or so.
And then Jimmy Butler shut his ass down.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
So, this has been some of the most competitive basketball I've ever watched, some of the most weirdest basketball I've ever watched. But
the Suns, dude.
I love the bubble, man.
Don't even get me started on how well the bubble has worked. Knock on wood, everybody. Right. Knock on wood. Bubbles work. Everybody,
you're with me.
I tell you one, man. That bubble idea and that Devin Booker.
I think Giannis should just run Spider 2 Eye Banana. But, I mean, okay, so should we just get into the Milwaukee Bucks while we're at it?
Well, first, shout out to the Suns. I'm sorry that we couldn't help you. And that segues right in because we cost you a playoff spot.
Right.
I'm sorry.
And it all, technically, that game cost them because of the Giannis headbutt.
Yeah.
And also, Mo Wagner, out of all people, man.
LOL that the league literally stacked it so that the Pelicans could get into the seeding game, and then they just didn't
it's
win.
True.
Yeah, I mean, the Pelicans were absolutely
they had the
fire their head coach.
By far the easiest road. Like, literally the easiest strength of schedule in the bubble.
And they were looking so good in the first, like, scrimmage games and the first, like, two games of the bubble.
And then
they sat Zion for, like, half of every game.
Brandon Ingram was looking like Kevin Durant in his youth.
Lonzo Ball was not even trying.
I hate Lonzo Ball, but
I like him a little bit, but yeah, he should have been trying.
He's just a Jason Kidd type player.
Hey, there's value in that.
I'll take that back. A Rajon Rondo.
One day.
You say a Jason Kidd type player?
A Jason. Well, Rondo's a Hall of Famer, too.
Know what I'm saying? A guy who's like past first.
A Jason Kidd who's going to beat his wife and then ruin the prime of one of the best players in Bucks history.
All right.
Oh.
We're getting into the Bucks. So.
Bucks.
I saw a meme of Jason Kidd, it's like, oh, that's a nice
It wasn't
a wife beating meme. Let me finish. It was like, oh, I see you have an otherworldly talent. Allow me to stunt his growth for you. And they were talking about Zion and Jason Kidd. Because, dude, imagine if Giannis didn't have Jason Kidd. That's a topic for another day. Because I could go on for 2 hours on that. But imagine if Giannis didn't have Jason Kidd in his head telling him not to shoot right now. Look, go back to look at his rookie year and his shooting form.
It was actually pretty good.
It was fluid. And now you can see it in his head every time he shoots.
It's like, okay, step one, put the elbow out. Step two, get my feet together.
Yeah.
Step three, finally jump. Step two,
and then he gets mad.
High.
Then he gets mad and he headbutts, and then he gets suspended. Man. But it's okay because he's back for the playoffs. Yeah. Round one, baby.
Hey, I kind of like the fact that Giannis did the headbutt.
It's funny because Giannis is the enforcer of this Bucks team.
And that's got to change.
It absolutely has
to change.
It's got to
change.
But he's the enforcer, dude.
I think it has to be Marvin.
No, it's Robin.
I think Brooke.
Does anybody remember the Minnesota rookie this year who dunked on Robin Lopez?
Colbert,
yeah, Jared Colbert.
And then Robin just was side by side. They were holding arms, screaming at each other down the court.
That's fine. I'd be okay with that. But sure. I think Robin plays a little bit too important of a role.
I also think he won't play that much in the playoffs. So I think it'll have to be someone who's on the court.
Right, but it's just like when you look at somebody... Robin Lopez's face just screams.
Well, he needs to grow out the beard again.
I don't think so.
I need him to look like Sideshow Bob.
He does look like Sideshow Bob.
Yeah, well, he does. That's true.
Without the beard. But anyways,
oh my gosh.
I mean, there's not really much to talk about in these Bucks seeding games because this whole front five or the starting five really didn't play. They maybe played like one game total.
Where it was like a full 32 minutes or whatever.
Right. You were missing three guys here. You know, the next game you're out four. The next you have like no starters.
You could tell they weren't putting maximum effort in because, look at the amount of turnovers they had. Look at how they weren't closing out on three-pointers.
Right.
They weren't running offensive sets at all. Like, there was no motion. They were just doing iso ball.
I mean, George Hill isn't the George Hill that we know.
I was getting annoyed watching the games because I was like...
Frank Mason played 30 minutes a
game. I was like, why is this offense so awful right now? And it was because I think they're hiding plays. Like, legitimately, it's a conspiracy theory, but I think they're hiding their plays for the playoffs.
I suppose.
And I think they're hiding their defense a little bit, too.
I think they were trying in some degree... And I think they were maybe even trying as much as they did in the regular season in a lot of their games. It was just that the game was so elevated because it was like, oh, we're finally back. We're finally back on the court. We can actually try and play for stuff. And a lot of teams had to play for stuff and positioning in the playoffs. And the Bucks didn't.
The
big takeaway that I take from it, I guess, is my biggest concern, I suppose, is just there is a sort of mentality that you have when you win easy.
Yeah.
When you just roll by a team.
Look at the Warriors at their best.
Exactly. Where like nobody can freaking touch you and you win by 35 points because you hit 15 more threes than the other team. And for the Bucks it's a little different, but even so. And now they have not had that in months. In months. Mm-hmm. They haven't had that sort of confidence where we don't even have to try and we can beat the crap out of teams.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what kind of gets me a little bit concerned.
But
now they are going to try, and they're going to play a very depleted Orlando Magic team that does not have two of their best players in Jonathan Isaac.
Oh,
who,
that sucks.
Right. What was it? It was an ACL tear, right?
Mm-hmm. Probably.
And then also Patella, I think, as well. And then Mo Bamba left the bubble for extensive COVID research, crazy words.
Honestly,
where
didn't even know he was.
Yeah, I had
team.
No idea what it meant. But he's gone too. So, and those are pretty much the two guys that you would have had confidence in guarding Giannis.
I think Aaron Gordon could
and
slow
Vucevic
him down.
Too, maybe a little bit. But Vucevic more of like a.
I think
him and Brooke
matchups.
I don't know who I hate more, Aaron Gordon or Ben Simmons.
Ben Simmons, and it's not even close.
Trust me, man. I have had some instances with Aaron Gordon covering games and all that. But
I think this is a controversial take going back to the seeding games. I think it's good that they lost those close games.
Yeah.
Because if you watch those games, you saw how much they were pressing, how nervous they were in those last couple of minutes. It's because they literally were never in that position in the regular season.
That's true.
So getting that experience,
you just don't want to make a habit of it, though. And
you
that's
don't.
What they've kind of done.
I don't think
is
so.
Is losing in the clutch.
But that there was only two games like that, though, or two or three this year.
But even so, like we talked about it before, like the most important thing on this team is that they need somebody who's going to perform in the clutch, and they still have not shown somebody who can do that. It's
it
supposed
should
to be Middleton.
It should be Chris.
It's supposed to be Middleton, and he bricked two three-pointers at the end of
the
that
The problem
one.
Was, and I think part of that was on Bud, where they had these timeouts, and he did not draw up a good play. It was a stagnant play where he throws it into Chris 35 feet, and then Chris, for some reason, even though there were 7 seconds left on the clock, decided that he needed to throw it up right
there. Yeah, and well, there was the George Hill, wide-open George Hill three-pointer
that
he missed.
That was a beautiful, beautiful play by Bud. That shows how good Bud can be at drawing up out-of-timeout plays.
But that's just what I'm worried about. Like, we had two different guys, and even three with Giannis early on where he had that late turnover.
Yeah.
We had three instances where three different guys were called upon to step up in the clutch, and all three of them didn't do it.
Yeah.
And you need a clutch performer to win a championship. And right now we still have not seen that from the Bucks, even though it was just
except for the Heat game, which I think is... People are overlooking that game.
You're right. They came back, and that was more like Coach Bud just screaming his head off and saying, you effers need to start giving a blank about all of this.
Good job.
But
thank you. Yeah, I really did not want to have to go back.
But that's what Coach Bud basically said to them in the locker room. And so I don't know.
You're playing that Heat team in the second round, too. Unless TJ Warren decides to be Michael Jordan again.
Right. There's a lot that we can be worried about. There's a lot that we could also be very wrong about, that we could be overreacting about.
You're right.
I mean, like, hey, moment of silence for the Orlando Magic. Thank you. Because the Bucks are, I mean, they're going to
roll through.
They're going to figure it out in that first
I'm
round.
Calling gentlemen sweep five games.
I don't even care how many.
I will be disappointed if the Bucks lose a game in this series.
I mean, I would be disappointed if they don't win it in at least six, but like, I honestly don't care how many.
Well,
games
it's
they
not
win.
Going to six.
Bucks
in six.
Just let me say this. I don't care how many games it is, because all I want to see is just are we back to like us?
Right. And if they're back,
I don't care
to,
how many games it takes.
If the Bucks are back to them, they're going to win in four, and they're going to win every game by 30 points.
I mean, Bledsoe is just getting. I mean, he finally was getting his feet back in the last like couple games. The bench is really probably the biggest concern for me.
Well, yeah,
but I'm not even really too concerned about it.
One thing that I'm worried about is how much Bud is going to play Ersan. I love Ersan a lot. He's been here for 150 years. That's not his real name, by the way. He's also like 3 years older. If you look into that conspiracy theory, I think his real name is like Arsen Ilyaslav or something like that. Look, it's a rabbit hole.
Okay.
But
that's interesting. Like Thon Maker's actually like 40.
But Isaac Bonga is another one. How is he 19 years old? Have you seen his face? He looks like he is 65. But I think if Bud plays Ersan a lot, it's a recipe for disaster. Because Ersan is a great regular season player, but he is too slow to play to the Bucks. Not only their fast pace, what they want to do, which that's another thing. In the seeding games, they did not run out in transition, which was a problem. But Bledsoe, Ilyasova is too slow for the playoffs, and unless you're putting him as a small ball center against a guy like Vucevic or Enes Kanter in the second or third round or something, there's no reason for him to be out on the court. I think you go small with
Marvin Williams is probably your center.
Marvin is the guy that I think should be playing. One of the highest minute totals off the bench for a forward. I also think Giannis should play 40 minutes a game.
That first game when Connaughton and Bledsoe were back, Marvin got the most minutes. I was not expecting that when I looked in the box score that night.
And I think Marvin, he still hasn't found his footing with this Bucks team. But I think that he is going to be a vital role.
All he has to do is just defend and give me rebounds. That's all I want from him.
Do you remember that podcast like three, four, well, it's I don't even know. Time is a flat circle at this point. But it was literally like,
just
as
like the earth.
As we stopped, all right, Kyrie. As we stopped recording, literally 5 minutes after, Sam and I were sitting in the room and it was like, Bucks just signed Marvin Williams. It was like 15 minutes before that, I had said the Bucks need a guy who can shoot a three, is fast and athletic, and can defend a couple of positions down low. And that is exactly who they got in Marvin Williams. They got the guy that they needed. The only thing that this team really needed besides maybe another point guard, but Frank Mason showed out. I think this Bucks roster is about as perfect as it can be.
Quick question. Has Marvin been your best bench player in these seeding games in the bubble?
I think it's been Kyle Korver. It's late in the bubble.
Hasn't been
Korver
Dante, even though
really
he got
good.
Dante has been probably one of the worst Bucks players in the bubble.
I think
DJ Wilson has played better than Dante. I'm being dead serious. And I think Sterling Brown has had his really good games and his really bad games.
And
so you
I don't need to see any more of him.
You kind of have to hope that you're getting a good Sterling if you play him. I don't know if there has been a best Bucks bench player because the bench has not been
good.
What it has
Korver was good in these last couple of games.
And I think Bud is still trying to remember what he did in Atlanta to get Korver open looks because Korver has had to fight for his looks.
Right.
And that's not what you should be doing for a guy like Kyle Korver. Luckily, he has the stamina of, anyone.
Yeah.
So he can run.
Carry rocks in the ocean.
Right.
Really. This is regimen.
That's what I love about Kyle Korver, too, is you could be down 12, and then four possessions later, it's a tie game.
Yeah.
Like, that's how good Kyle Korver is.
I think
he heats up, and he's like, oh, he just hit another three. If LeBron did not have Kyle Korver, he would not have won as many titles as he did, and he definitely would not have won the title in Cleveland.
Well, that was the only one he won with Kyle Korver.
Yes, that's what I meant. Sorry.
Yeah. Just wanted to,
But he wouldn't have gotten to the championships that he got to without Kyle Korver.
I agree.
And he would not have won the one in Cleveland without him because he was the catalyst between Golden State's three-point shooting and Korver was the Cavaliers' three-point shooter.
So I know we got to wrap this up, but there's one question that I want to ask quick, and the Big Show's been asking it a lot. Behind Giannis and Chris, who is that number three? Who is the guy that needs to step up the most? Because I think it's a legitimately good question. Mm-hmm. And my money right now is on Brook.
Me too.
I think Brook is the third most important player. Especially if he becomes Brooklyn Brook.
Because you're saying he's the most important, but he needs to step up the most?
No. Or who is the third most important to the Bucks
in their championship
success.
Run? Right. And the thing is, I think it's Brook too, and I think Brook has been the best player in the bubble for the Bucks so far.
Oh, absolutely.
And
which is funny because Giannis was named to like the third team.
Was he really? I didn't even see the bubble stuff, to be honest with you.
He had votes for best in the bubble or something like that. Like,
really?
Yeah, it was weird.
With Luka Doncic scoring 34 and 19 at him? 34, 19, Luka. And 14?
Yeah.
Dude, Luka is so good.
I love
Luka. But that's besides the point. I think Brook has been so good. He's been hitting his three-point shots again, which is something that he struggled with
and
all season.
We've seen Brooklyn Brook.
Yeah.
Which I think... Thank God for you, Coach Bud, for doing that more. I think that the Bucks should be doing that more. Because think about it. You're struggling for a bucket. What do? You send it to one of the best low post players in the NBA.
He is so clean in the post when he gets the ball.
People forget he was an all-star in Brooklyn because he was the best post player in the NBA.
Yeah, best post scorer in the NBA. And if he can be that and on top of it hit his shots from the outside and the perimeter and stretch the floor, oh, good Lord.
That's my favorite thing about watching Brook is you watch him in the post and he puts up this ridiculous shot and you're like, how in the world?
Yeah,
like, why is he shooting
so
that?
It's so formulaic.
And then he is the slowest person you'll ever see. Like, he takes like two steps and it takes 12 seconds, but that ball, it's still, he's hooking it up and it's swishing.
Yeah, I don't get it. I love his little dip when he dips underneath somebody's
and
arm
then
and then comes back around.
He doesn't even like do like a full on shot. He does
he just
like
flicks the ball at the rim.
It's like
goes
when you're
in.
It's like when you're flicking a booger off your finger. It's like that when he tries to throw the ball.
And I love Brook Lopez.
He's such a goofy dude. He's in his home, like home away from home in Orlando.
Yeah. And
if
we're talking about a guy that has to be the enforcer, like, and who's on the court most of the time, and it has to be Brook, that even proves how much more important he's going to be to this team to make sure that Giannis doesn't do stupid stuff like headbutting people or
so
shoving people to the ground.
When Giannis did that,
he's like, oh,
he grabbed Mo and he was just like, he's like, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed.
And that's the thing, like Brook is usually so level headed,
And so I
unless there's a bad call from the refs,
right.
Then he does not hesitate.
But for the most part,
voice.
With the stuff that actually happens on the court, like if he gets elbowed or something like that, like he might like look at the ref and give him a dirty look or something like that, or with the bad call, right? But for the most part, when it comes to like person to person interaction between the players on the court, he's usually pretty level headed.
Yeah,
and so I think that switch isn't going to be really hard for him to turn on if they do want him to be the enforcer, but I think with that fire that we have seen with him at the refs, he could probably do it.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited. I think, like I said, Bucks in five. It'll be a gentleman's sweep. They'll give him one game. I disagree.
If it's not a sweep, I'm going to be disappointed.
You underestimate
the wrath of Michael Carter Williams and his revenge tour.
And you underestimate this Magic team. They're not bad.
I didn't say they were bad.
Well, just. So the way
I
that they're built,
I just don't think if the Bucks are going to make a championship run, I don't think the Magic should have the light of day.
They're a great 3-point shooting team. All it takes is one game for Evan Fournier and Terrence Ross to be on. You're going to lose that game. So I think if you limit that outburst to one game, I think that that's probably going to happen because you can't keep good shooters like Fournier and Terrence Ross shut down for an entire series. You can't stop Vucevic from having his game where he gets 30 points on you. I think that there's going to be one game that it's not the Bucks' night, and it is
and
the Magic's night.
I'll be happy with them winning in five, but I'll be a little bit disappointed that they didn't sweep.
That's fair. And to be fair, I also said last year against the Pistons it was going to be a gentleman's sweep, and they just the Pistons did not show up.
And maybe that's what the Magic will do.
We'll see.
We'll see.
You know what I'm not disappointed in? The best of clips from the fan in this week.
Nice. We got some good ones.
We're going to hear them. Honestly, one of them might
that
be.
Was a preview.
Let's go to the best on the fan now.
One of them might be my favorite of all time. Which one is it? You'll have to stay tuned and find out.
That's no horn spot.
Oh, shut the up.
No! No! God!
There's a drop.
It's F. Sam and Dan on the Fan on Demand. I'm Dan Plucker alongside Sam Schmitz and Evan Heffelfinger. If you don't know that by now, maybe you should just stop listening to our podcast.
Well,
anyway.
No, that's not true. In case Bleacher Report features us again.
Oh, yes. If Bleacher Report features
us.
If you're new to us.
I love you.
We care for you very deeply.
They care
I mean
for you.
And with all of the creepiness that it could
potentially
they
be They care
involved.
For you. I love you.
Oh.
So, well so
there's
that.
One-upping us. Anyway.
How we looking?
How we looking? So, speaking of caring and loving and...
Yeah, segue this.
Maybe
all
too much
those other things. Joe had one very intriguing segment on the Big Show this week, and I'm not going to provide any context to you. But this is a few of the things that he said.
I'm not really good at it because I'm not really clever with words. You can just get so creative with the little pegs, let the other guy just take full control. Right, just two people,
yeah,
one-on-one.
Okay.
Maybe they have a four-way now. That's a very dirty game, but I love it.
All right, so Joe. What we were actually talking about there was board games.
Is that what you guys were talking about?
We're
I honestly didn't know the
games.
Context.
What? Top five board games last Friday, and he said that he wasn't good at Scrabble, which is the first cut. And then he said his favorite game was Battleship, which was the second cut.
Lame.
Which is why he loved all of the little pegs and how you could get creative with them. And then the other two, I couldn't remember. I can't remember what it was. But the last one was when somebody brought up Cards Against Humanity. Mm-hmm. And he goes, oh, that's a dirty, dirty game, but I love it. And I just thought that that was an enjoyable little segment that I had plenty of drops from. And I was like, yeah, I'm just going to put those all together and make it sound kind of awkward. So that's
number one, by
from.
The way, is Settlers of Catan.
Yes, thank you. Love that game.
Mm-hmm.
Just played that the other day, actually.
Nice.
Great game.
You want a medal?
I do.
Okay.
Can I have a cookie, too?
Well, I'd rather you segue into our second clip.
The second clip draws resemblance to somebody choking on a cookie, which is Gary Ellerson, who got a little bit too heated when talking about the Bucks last week.
Lopez was so extended out off the block. Why don't you take that guy down on the block where you may only just have one move because you're already where you need to be? To me, they were allowed to be pushed out a little bit too far. Oh my goodness. Jen, get him, Jen.
Gary.
Jen. Jen. Jen, hit him in the back.
Gary.
Hey, man. What? This man, how we know we ain't going to catch something? This man coughing all through the on the
Gary. Gary, are you okay? Are you okay, buddy?
Got a little bit too heated, cuz. Can you film yourself coughing? That sounds funny.
All right. Gary needs water. Man. He needs a cup of water. Let's take a break.
No, man. They're going to get out on the block.
They need to get on the block. Okay, we've got it. We're going to go to a break. I hope Gary is okay and doesn't choke and die. Oh my God. Everything will be okay.
That's Skylar's fault. That's your fault.
That's almost Skylar.
You almost killed Gary. Killed him.
K-I-L-T.
Right. Gary's still okay. Catching his breath. Break, Wendy's Big Show continues right after this.
One of the best things, and we've said this before, is when Leroy Butler,
when he gets
that high-pitched laugh, I don't think there's a way you cannot laugh at that.
I mean, it is the funniest laugh.
It is one of the best that I've ever heard.
In the best way possible.
Billy's.
What about Rami's?
Damn.
Rami's wasn't good. Your Billy impression was okay.
I mean, those both out of love. I love both of those boys.
Yes. Anyway, that's a trap.
Stop it. Listen, do you want to edit this podcast? You can. I'll let you edit this one.
I don't want to edit this week. I gotta get home.
All right. Well, then I'll just go ahead and introduce this last one. Since you want to be on that, I'm really not making it easy for myself.
No, you're not.
In case anyone doesn't know who listens to the show, every Friday, that's what it is now instead of Thursday, we do trivia with trivia master Paul Immig. We call it Take Paul. Me Out to the Paul Game. And someone made a very good graphic for us. I don't know if you guys saw the picture.
You showed me.
I was not sober in the picture that I submitted. And I think it shows. Have you seen the picture, Sam?
Yeah.
I was not sober.
We can
sober.
Use it as our picture for this.
That sounds like a lot of work.
For this podcast. No?
That sounds like a lot of work.
Okay.
But anyway, I came in second this week. I'm on a bit of a losing streak. But Bart Winkler won. And he was feeling himself. And this is how the show ended on Friday. I'm not going to say anything else. Just sit back and listen. No introduction. Enjoy. I also did give an introduction.
You did.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you, everyone. I won the game. Trivia is so fun until the bosses take it away from us.
Which would be lame. You got it. A rhyme. I had to
just talk. Saw a tweet. It says, at Wings thinks at Paul Immig, best segment of the show. A thank you.
Barton and Porzingis had 30 a game, but he wins because this game is lame. Or that's the real winner in life till he goes home and cleans the toilets for his wife.
All right. I have one. Do you have one? Do you have a song?
No, I'm sitting back watching you guys. This is fun.
I have one more song.
Okay.
I have one more song.
Hit it.
You waste too much time on trivia. Focus your energy on a 15-second promo that will run twice on a Sunday.
You're the man.
Sometimes.
Wait, Eric,
you're cruising for a bruising today.
One more for me.
You got another one?
Yeah. Please do your promos or I'll get blamed. Like everything else around here, just blame the morning show guy that hosts, produces, answers the calls, and does updates.
We are cruising for a bruising on this Friday
morning.
What
are you talking about?
Some of those high notes, you're a little pitchy, dog.
Yeah, it was a little flat, but we can work on it.
I got to work on the voice. Bumblebee, bumblebee, bumblebee.
Yeah, I mean, you are talking to a guy, your trivia host, who was once a professional singer. So.
Paul, do you want
to
do one?
Yeah, do you want
to? No, I haven't done my vocal warm-ups.
You like Broadway.
Paul used to cover the Packers, but now he hosts trivia for Three Bums.
It's about career trajectory, and some go up and... some land here.
Yeah. Sometimes you need to hit rock bottom.
Brian, keep coming in at 5 a.m. Even though we're in a pandemic and nobody works or gets up until 8:30.
Well, don't say that. I had full...
Hey, we do have another tweet here. It says, if trivia gets canceled, I'm storming the radio station.
Is that Mark?
Is there an email?
Is that Mustard?
No, that's a real tweet that I just got.
This one comes from Mustard. He says, Horvat is the man. Sorry.
No, the tweets I read are real. This isn't from Mark, okay?
Wait, what are you saying? Yeah, what are you saying here, Paul?
What are you
You know exactly what I'm saying.
No, I don't.
Mark. Paul, what are you saying? We make up fake emails on this show?
I'm saying that there may or may not be.
I'm taking this virus seriously. Coming up next is Bill, who hosted a cigar dinner just last night.
All right, we'll be back Monday, allegedly.
I don't think so.
Paul, thank you.
It's my show on Monday.
Hi, everybody.
Paul, we're hosting Monday.
Evan and Joe, just like at the Fan in New York, the Fan in Milwaukee, Monday at 6.
Thank you for listening to our podcast show. I know that you wanna know where to listen and
go to Dan, hear more 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Dan will tell you, bro.
Nice, that's pretty good too. Well, you can hear us on the radio.com app on the new 1057fmthefan.com, which none of us know how to use yet.
So here's
can
the thing, boys.
Say, can you?
I'm gonna preface this right now. Probably not gonna make a story for this podcast.
That's fine.
I'm just letting you know.
Yeah, because we don't know how to use our new website yet. Thanks, corporate. maybe we should cut that part out.
No, anyway, it's okay. They don't listen to this.
That's true. There's no way in hell that they're listening to this. They're always listening. It's time for us to go. Yep. Thanks for listening. We have to go because we have some sort of life occasionally.
Don't be like the St. Louis Cardinals.
Don't be like the Cardinals or the Reds, we don't know what's going on with them.
Yeah.
But the Cardinals are messed up.
Don't be like Mike Clevenger or Zach Plesac.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just don't be a dumbass.
Really, don't be a dumbass.
Don't be a dumbass, Milwaukee.
I mean, just listen to our station.
Don't be a dumbass.
105.7 FM and 1250 AM. No. The Fan.
Drink a beer with me.
No.
Actually, yeah, I no did have one idea to. That maybe we'll bring up next week that I wanted to talk to you guys about today, which would be pretty cool. It's a hypothetical situation.
What is it? You'll have to stay tuned and find out.
You'll have to stay tuned.
All right,
don't be a dumbass, Milwaukee.
It's been a long day.
Yeah.
Time for us to go. Have a good one.
Sure.
Time for a beer. I need one.
Goodbye!